This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligi Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Good to be with you on this Monday with Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Big show today. That's Greg Amsinger joining us at 12:15. Mike Claiborne, Cardinals broadcaster at 12:30. Listen to Claves and Ricky in San Diego. What a series. I mean, really, really dramatic. This Cardinals team just plays drama all the time. Yesterday, I want to start with that. That one really hurt. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I sat there and I'm like, I really don't even... One of my friends texted me, he said, remember this game. I said, what game? I forgot it already. I just want it eliminated from my mind.
Why did he want to remember it? I'd like to know what he's got going.
I think that game might, you know, down the road, I think what he's saying is that is a win that got away.
Wish you had that one.
So, like, yeah. If they got into a scenario where they were in the playoff picture and that cost them a game, that's one that was stolen. That won't be the only one, by the way. Just this team is going to play games that are going to get away from them, and they're going to steal games from other teams. So I kind of chalked it up as that. Like, you could not have had a better situation. Riley O'Brien, the guy has been lights out for most of the year. He's blown a couple saves here and there, but most of the year he's been tremendous. And of all people, Nick Castellanos goes deep on him. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I hated it, and now it's kind of worn off a little bit. Now that I'm talking about it, I hate it again. Well, but it is what it is.
Okay, so as we have talked about a million times, we know what 2026 is supposed to be about, right? So it was difficult for me to go in having any expectations about them winning at all. It just, wait, whatever happens in the win column, great. You know, ideally you can win a bunch of games, get these younger guys some experience winning at the big league level. That'd be a nice benefit to them. But in the end, this is all about, you know, Walker and Weatherholt and just how do they make progress as players. That's what this is all about. But while they're playing well and they're above 500, I'd like to see them stay above 500 as long as possible and see if, you know, everything goes right and they're still in the conversation in September, the playoff conversation. That'd be cool. Wild card conversation. That'd be awesome if they could do that. And so every one of these little games like this, like being down to your last strike or having them down to their last strike and letting that one get away, it does sting a little bit. You can't help but get invested in the individual games, even if this season didn't have expectations going in, because you still get invested. You're in it. You're emotional about the team. You care about them. You're wearing the caps. You're buying the jerseys and the shirts. So you're in. You want them to win. And when they have a game in hand, those are the tough ones. I'd rather lose by 15 than have what happened yesterday. However, the flip side of that, and Big Mark is watching us on YouTube, and he says this team is fun to watch. Yeah, they're not getting blown out, really. It's happened, but that's not really what this MO is. This Cardinals team stays in ball games. They give themselves an opportunity every night. And in that regard, it is fun to watch, but you still hate to see them give away games like they did yesterday.
Just to refresh everyone's memory, this four-game series, the Thursday game was a 2-1 win. That was like a playoff game. Libby starts a great game. Mason hits the ball that gets by Castellanos into right for a triple that scores Jordan Walker.
Yeah.
No, that was the next day.
Oh, that's the next day. Yeah,
triple that scores Jordan Walker. Riley O'Brien looks unhittable at the end of that game and gets the save, and the Cardinals win 2-1. It was the next day, the 6-0 game, where JJ hits one pass to Tatis, who kind of jogs to go get it, which was sort of weird. But anyway, the base is clear. It's a Little League grand slam for JJ Weatherholt. And he ends up getting a couple of RBIs out of that, and the Cardinals one hit the Padres, which actually got overlooked. Everyone talked about the Weatherholt Little League grand slam. That's what made all the highlight reels and everything. Meanwhile, Michael McGreevy was unbelievable. And they get one hit in that game, and the Cardinals win it 6-0. Saturday was a 4-2 loss, just a tough one there. They give up the 3 spot in the 5th. Dustin May looked pretty good for a while, but they end up not really being able to climb back into it. But They load the bases on Mason Miller. That was the game where Machado hits the home run to go up 4-2. Mason Miller had already gotten the out in the eighth. And I'm like, this ball game is over. Wait a minute. These are the 2026 Cardinals. Like, I probably shouldn't turn this off. And they load the bases against Mason Miller with the bottom of the order. And then end up losing the game in the very end as JJ watches 102 miles an hour go by him. And then the game yesterday, which got away from Castellanos, hits the home run, tie game. Machado gets the sac fly, wins it. They end up splitting the series. It was a dramatic, fun playoff-like series.
Yesterday's the kind of game that if you're a team that's supposed to win the division, but you know you're going to have a tight race with somebody, like let's say you were picked to win the division like the Cubs were, okay, and you let that one get away yesterday, that's the kind of game that you think about for probably 3 or 4 days. But I just, in the moment, I have these reactions about the Cardinals, if they win, if they lose, if something bad happens like yesterday. It does feel like a gut punch in the moment, but I do get past it pretty quickly. Because of the context of the season.
I totally understand that, and I feel that way too, and I'm getting started. What happened last year where the Cardinals went 19-8 in May, and I start getting wrapped back up into it where I resisted getting wrapped into it because I didn't think that team could do anything. I'm not sure this team can either, but I am having fun with the current moment and the fact that they're in this very competitive division. And the other thing is just the look in their eye. Like, the eye test will tell you this team doesn't back down from anybody. And I like this comment right here. We got a lot of comments coming in, but this one from Zachary Kelly, I 100% agree. Depending on how this team responds to a game like that could actually be the start of something. Yes, I think that the end result is they held the Padres to not very much offensively. They battled them like crazy. They played a great series. They should be proud of the effort, disappointed with the result. And I'd love to see what they do now with the A's and when they come back home to play the Royals this weekend. You got to put on a show for your home fans against the Royals and the Pirates and get yourself back on track. How they respond from that, I would anticipate they respond well based on what we've seen. Ollie told us himself, they're not afraid of anything. They don't care, which means they don't care what happened in the past, win or lose. They're ready to go play the next one.
I feel like this is, in some ways, a house money kind of season. That's what you're playing with, mm-hmm. right? That this is sort of no expectations. So whatever you do, if you win, it's kind of gravy, don't you think?
Yeah,
and I mean, that's the way I see it. The real third man who is always watching on YouTube, he sends a message in saying the division is there for the taking. Wouldn't you like to win the division? Of course. Of course, I'd love for them to win the division. I just don't know that even with this good start, I don't know that this team has the horses to stick with it for 6 months and to be this good for 6 months. And it's not me saying that. You know, I'm not being a pessimist about it. I think that's a realistic viewpoint, especially when you look at a lot of the prognosticators, people who make projections, who have their own projection models. And what some of the folks who said this team could maybe win 66 games this year. You know, the range was like between 66 and 75.
Well, every sports book in America had it at 69.
Yeah, so if that's the expectation going into the season,
69.5.
That's not pessimism. That's like, hey, this is how people look at your team. People, experts, people who know, they're looking at your team like it's one that's not supposed to be competitive. So any amount of competitiveness you get is sort of, it's like playing with house money.
Yeah,
I'm just enjoy it.
I'm just having a good time. I'm very present with this team. Like, I'm not thinking about September, October. I'm thinking about May 12th, tomorrow's game against the A's. Put on a nice show, invest yourself in it, and have fun. If the Cardinals get that last strike last night or yesterday afternoon, and they're 2.5 out and they own second place all to themselves, the narrative's a little different today. People are saying, I know it's a long term, but I guarantee you people are like, wait a minute now. This team could win. This team could end up. They just took three out of four from the Padres. That's how close these things are. We can say this, though. They're young, they're a lot of fun, and we are enjoying the heck out of it. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Greg Amsinger, I know he's enjoying it. MLB Network's Greg Amsinger, Cardinals broadcaster Mike Claiborne. With Chris Ronji, I'm Tom Ackerman. Matt Pajeski's here. Frank Ladd's here. The whole gang's here. And the Gashouse Gang will be right back. Welcome back. It is 12:19. Time check sponsored by Paramount Men's Medical Center. This is the Gashouse Gang with Chris Ronji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Our producers are Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd. We got a whole team around you, Greg Amsinger from MLB Network. It's always great to have you on KMOX. How are you, pal?
Oh, Tom Ackerman, good to hear your voice, man. How you been? It was a good weekend. Look, I said this before, I'll say it again. When the Cardinals' losses look good, tip your cap, dude. That's a 99-mile-an-hour riding fastball up and in that Nick Castellanos turned around. That's a good pitch.
Yeah, it really was.
If that's how we lose games, that's a good day.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't have a better situation. Your best pitcher's out there. It just hurts, you know. It doesn't mean it doesn't hurt because you care and you love the team, but you get over it because the overall picture is a good series.
You know, this is why I like Greg so much, because Greg is the one guy in the world, I think, that could come up, watch you get punched in the stomach, and Greg can say, you know what? Hey, this is a good thing. You're going to throw up all that bad stuff you ate earlier. You know,
let me tell you, I'm a very optimistic person. I will agree with you. But I also have perspective, right? Like, when your losses look good, it means you're probably a good team. If they win that game, they're one strike away from winning that game. They're 14-6 on the road. 14-6 on the road if they win that game. That's the second best, I think, in all of baseball. Like, this is a team that's competing at a really high level. I try to tell my son this all the time. He's on a really high-level AAU basketball team now, right? But he's not scoring as many points as he did at the other AAU basketball team. And I go, London, by the end of this AAU basketball season, the modern version of London, that's his name, the modern version of London Amsinger would beat up the kid that was scoring 25 points a game for the other AAU basketball team. They're not even the same player. Even though you're scoring 10 points a game here, you're better than you were there. So it's perspective. Yeah, sure, you lost the game, but it's such a marathon. I do understand a lot of your listeners think the Cardinals should be 40-0. I understand that. It's a thing in St. Louis. But it is a marathon. It's not a sprint. I like the way they're running right now.
You know, you do bring up a good point about the road record, which I know we've talked about before, but at 13-7, and then to be 10-10 at home, it's the opposite of what most good teams do. Usually you're trying to be well over 500 at home, and then you try to be around 500 when you're on the road. What do you make of that? How are the Cardinals doing that this year?
Well, it's a good sign. I'll also say that the fact the record is what it is, and they're a +3 in run differential. I think that's a good. It means they really haven't thoroughly started clicking from a starting pitching standpoint. I think the starting pitching staff is coming together. I think Leahy's starting to figure it out. Last couple have been really, really good. I was in a pitching duel his last time out, and you tip your cap to Walker Buehler. But I really like what I saw from Matthew Liberatore's last time out. Obviously, McGreevy is locked in at a high level with 9 strikeouts. No one saw that coming. I feel like the rotation is going to start performing on a regular basis at home with that home cooking, which hasn't happened in those 20 home games so far this year. I like it. These are all signs that point in the direction of the team is only going to get better as they age. They're all young guys. And if they're playing at this level right now, the more they get relaxed and they settle in and they all have very specific roles, they know what part of the lineup they're hitting in, they know what part of the bullpen now their role is going to be called on. I just think this team is going to be in the mix for a wild card all season long.
I think you're right. And, you know, I watched that series and I enjoyed the heck out of it because I felt like it was a playoff series. That's what it felt like. It was going back and forth. It was exciting. The pressure, the high, the loud crowd, the high capacity Petco Park was full. I mean, it was fun. Let me ask you this one. How good? I'm going to throw a little fuel on the fire because Greg Amsinger is cooking right now. How good are the Padres? How good is that team that the Cardinals just split?
Look, it's hard to say that they're not in the mix when you've got the most dominant human that throws a baseball. Mason Miller is unfair. He's unfairly good. That's how dominant he is. Now, I went into the year questioning the starting pitching depth. I don't think they have enough. I mean, they had to go get Lucas Giolito. We'll see what he gives them when he's ready to rock. But I don't think their starting pitching depth is good enough to be a playoff team. Manny Machado, I always love, he's a future Hall of Famer. Fernando Tatis Jr. is not getting it going right now. It's weird. He doesn't look like a happy player. They're relying on a lot of guys. I still am not sold on Jackson Merrill as a superstar player. I'm not. They gave him a big contract. Like him. I like him. I like Roman Anthony. I don't think Roman Anthony is one of the top 50 players in baseball. Everyone thought he was the next one, Juan Soto. I'm not. I never bought that. So there are a lot of warts on the San Diego Padres, if you ask me. And I, before the season started, said they'd be around a 500 team. So I think they're going to come back down to earth. They're not at the level of Los Angeles Dodgers in the NL West.
What do you think of, and I know we have spoken, Greg, about where the National League Central is, because still every team is over 500. In fact, the last place team is three games over 500. That's how solid the division has so far been this year. Do you see anybody pulling away anytime soon, or do you think it's going to look like this for quite some time?
Well, look, if the young pitching for the Pittsburgh Pirates stays healthy, that's going to be a tough mountain to climb for every other team in the division. Now, the Brewers really caught our attention this week, the way they came out and swept the New York Yankees. That was impressive. And I think Bryce Turang, in 3 years from now, when he's wearing a different uniform, will be one of the top five shortstops in all of baseball, because he should be playing shortstop. That's cost control to put him at second base. He's going to be a 25 to 30 homer shortstop someday. So he had the walk-off homer yesterday. I love the kid. I think he's great. They're going to get healthier. They got Churio back. Yelich is eventually going to come back. I like the Brewers. I do. They always somehow figure it out. I like the Reds the most going into the year in the division, but I had no idea that their bullpen would turn into a dumpster fire. In no way. Pagan hamstring falls on the ground. Who knows when that guy is in mid-30s is going to come back. Santian, who's also a guy in his 30s, was great. 6'3", 285-pound right-hander. Now he's falling apart. He gave Ashcraft the ninth inning. Then he blows it his first crack at it with the Cubs. I know they won their last two games, but you're relying on a rookie in Sal Stewart. Not to be your leadoff guy like the Cardinals are asking J.J. Weatherall to do, but they're asking Sal Stewart to drive in 40, be the protection behind Ellie De La Cruz driving a buck 20. They're expecting him to be an MVP candidate. Okay, completely different ball of wax. So I'm stepping back from my adoration for the Cincinnati Reds, and I look at it now, and I think eventually it's going to be, in my opinion, the Cardinals with the Cubs and Brewers, because I'm still not believing that the Pittsburgh Pirates bullpen and lineup is going to consistently perform what they've been doing so far to support that starting rotation.
The NL Central has five winning teams. The Pirates and the Reds are three games over 500 and tied for fourth place in the division. Meanwhile, in the American League, two of the divisions have four teams under 500 each, which is incredible. And one of them is the AL West, the Athletics, who currently play their home games in Sacramento. They're playing the Cardinals tomorrow. Greg, how good are the A's?
A's can hit. Now, that's saying Nick Kurtz, who's got this on-base streak over 30 games, doesn't have a lot of home runs. It's the weirdest thing ever. He is, to me, when he got drafted, he was the number one player. I would have taken him in a hot second. He was the best player of the draft. My comp for him when he got drafted was take Jim Thome's power and mix it with Sean Casey's bat-the-ball skills. I had a lot of eye rolls and people on social media was like, Greg, stop with the Hall of Fame comparisons. It's so annoying. This is a kid, college kid. Now look at him. His rookie year, he was incredible. Now he's simmered down. Why? Because he's in the leadoff spot. I hate it. I hate putting sluggers in the leadoff spot. And I beg Chaim Bloom, and I hope he's listening right now, never put Jordan Walker in the leadoff spot. I like what you got going right now. JJ might hit 30 home runs. That's great. But he's not the slugger of the team. Like, don't – that just drives me crazy when teams do that. So this is what they've got. They love Kurtz. When there's a righty on the mound, he'll lead off. Shea Langeliers is – MVP candidate good right now. I'm going to do a Greg's list today of the top catchers, because Cal Raleigh, who is the star of the position last year with 60 home runs, he's not one of the nine best catchers in baseball right now. And Shea Langeliers is going to be up there with Drake Baldwin for the number one spot. So they've got a terrific catcher. Jacob Wilson injured his shoulder over the weekend. We'll see how that goes. Starting pitching is an issue, especially when they're playing in Sacramento. The ball's going to fly. Jordan Walker might have four home runs by the time this series is over. So I like the Cardinals' chances to go in there and get a couple W's.
I have not told Tom my idea, but I am, when we talk to Ollie Marmol tomorrow, who's on the show every Tuesday, I am going to lobby hard for him to finally get himself an ejection, because I want him to take that long walk out through the outfield. Yeah, I love the fact there is no clubhouse behind the dugout, so if you get ejected, you have to walk all the way out, and you can take your time, and you could really milk it. Don't you think that'd be a lot of fun?
You know, as we celebrate the legendary Bobby Cox, right, who was ejected more than any manager ever. Could you imagine Bobby Cox having to walk all the way down the third base line? Could you imagine? I mean, especially a road game, he'd start screaming at fans along the way. Like, he would just, once it was gone, he was gone. He was an angry, angry human, but a wonderful father figure to so many great baseball players. But yeah, that's a funny thing. Ollie's just so disciplined, man. He's a starer. I'm not good at that. I'm an emotional person, as you can tell on the phone. I like to get into it. So I would definitely, I'd be Wally Backman if I was a manager.
Oh,
I'd get dirt on the plate. Oh, my goodness. I'd go
pretend
nuts.
To throw grenades,
Billy Martin.
Starer. He could stare you down. Those guys have great discipline. I don't understand them.
He said the ABS has kind of taken some of that away from him. So he doesn't have as much of an argument.
He led
anymore.
The National League last year.
I know. He was
Do you guys miss arguing? Harold Reynolds told me, man, I really miss arguing. I'm like, in 100 years, if there was a documentary on baseball done in 2026, and they watch it in 100 years. And yeah, there's one thing I miss about baseball is that we don't have grown men out screaming in the faces.
Oh,
of other grown men. It's kind of odd, right?
Buddy, let me tell you, when I was growing up, when all of us were growing up, what got me excited as a kid in the 80s and got the crowd electrified were a few things. Ozzy making a play, obviously. Vince Coleman at first base. That would get the whole place roaring in anticipation. Willie McGee legging out a triple. But Whitey Herzog, when he would run out of the dugout and go after that umpire, that whole place would be on fire. I mean, it was a lot of fun. Really was.
And while you were watching that as a youngster, you didn't think about that umpire's poor mother. Maybe she was at the game.
Yeah, no. I was just
umpires don't have feelings. We don't worry about that.
Greg, we were both in Cooperstown in 2014 when Bobby Cox went into the Hall of Fame with Tony La Russa and Joe Torre, Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, Frank Thomas, if I recall. It was some class. I would assume that you're going to be paying tribute to Mr. Cox today on MLB Network.
No doubt, and there's nothing we can do on our show with Harold Reynolds and Dan Plesac at 5 p.m. Eastern that tops what they did on MLB Central today. Mark DeRosa came up through the Braves system, and he had Hall of Famer John Smoltz and Brian McCann on the show. And these three terrific baseball players talked about the father figure they had in Bobby Cox, and I was hanging on every word. And there was one great story that Brian McCann told. Apparently, when Bobby Cox lost a regular season game, and it didn't happen all that often, like, he was unbelievable the regular season, he would grab the lineup cards as he was walking down the tunnel, and he was all angry and mad, and he would throw the lineup cards, slam them down on the tunnel floor as you would walk down the stairs. And he did it every single time he lost a regular season game. And all the players emotionally were connected to seeing those lineup cards. He'd be the first to walk down the stairs. And Brian McCann said to Mark DeRosa, I didn't lose out of fear of letting the other team win or being angry. I was so sad to walk down those stairs going into the locker rooms, the clubhouse, and knowing we let him down. None of us wanted to let him down. And that, listen, man, there were probably better tacticians that were in that role as manager. He's a former GM. He is what a manager was supposed to be. When your players love you like a father, as the father of a son, right? I have a son. I would love for my son to play for a man that he loved that much, because that meant that man cared for my son that much. Bobby Cox did it the way you're supposed to do it. And the numbers back that up.
Well said, buddy. Have a great day today on MLB Network. We appreciate you.
You guys are the best. We'll do it next week.
Greg Amsinger with us on the Gas House Gang every Monday at 12:15. We'll take a break. Cardinals broadcaster Mike Claiborne will join us. as the Cardinals remain in California back after this.
Now, the Cardinals Conversation on KMOX. Sponsored by Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
1-1 the count, and the pitch to J.J.'s hit into right field for a base hit. One run scores. Here comes another. Oh, and it got underneath Tatis. It's going all the way to the wall. Here comes a third run. And rounding third is Weatherholt. He's going to score. 4-0 Cardinals. Wow, what a break.
How much fun was that? Great call, great moment as the Cardinals split the series with the Padres. With producers Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd, I'm Tom Ackerman alongside Chris Ranji. We welcome in Cardinals broadcaster Mike Claiborne, paired with Ricky Horton for those four games in San Diego. Hello, Claibs.
How are you guys doing?
Doing great. I promised I would eliminate this from my mind, but I will say I'm going to start backwards and say I was in the car with my wife running some errands yesterday on Mother's Day, being a good husband and hanging out, and I listened to you guys call that ninth inning, and I refrained from saying anything foul or expressing any anger. I just listened quietly, and it hurt. But I'm over it, and I'm ready to move on. But that it was just a, you know, after all that fun, such a great series, that was a tough way to finish it.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I think that it's, as I tell people, it's part of 162. You know, you're going to walk off teams in the same manner. But when that one strike away and a guy fouls off a ton of pitches and uses Fernando Tatis' bat to hit the home run, you just say, well, moon and stars weren't properly aligned that day. So you turn the page and you move on to tomorrow. And, you know, I was talking to Ali after the game, and, you know, he made a point. He said, you know, guys aren't disappointed that they lost. They're pissed because they should have won all four of them. And it was one of those things where even on Saturday, you know, we had a chance to win that game, especially when you have the bases loaded in the situation we had, and we're facing the best closer in the game as far as Mason Miller. You know, it's just one of those that got away, and I think it's also a great opportunity to learn and grow from it.
And also, Claves, this is a what they have done. Well, yesterday, first time that they have lost an extra inning game. It took them six tries to get there. They were perfect up until that point. They're also winning all those one-run games. They're 8-3 when it's a one-run game. They have played some tight ball games, and usually they come up big late. So when you see that, does that read as a just a fluke to you? Does it read as something special about this group? How do you see it?
You know, I think it's something special about them, because if you look at their numbers after the seventh, from the seventh inning on, I mean, Jordan Walker's, I think his OPS is like over 1,000. And guys are looking forward to those opportunities. And the one thing about this team, Chris, there's no one guy carrying the team. I mean, everybody's making a contribution, you know, whether it's the Little League Grand Slam or the Mason Wynn dribbler that almost wasn't inside the Parker. You know, you're getting fly balls, guys advancing runners with a bunt. I mean, there's little things that they're doing. And the one thing that we can't overlook, man, they play defense. Gosh, they make some plays. And some of them look routine, but when you see them in person, you say to yourself, you know, a lot of people wouldn't have been able to make that play. And yesterday, the way the game ended, you know, Jordan Walker was a hair off of throwing that guy out at the plate. And, you know, he may have as good of a throwing arm as there is in the National League for sure. And so you see those incremental growth spurts with everybody as a player, and then also it comes together as a team. And that's what makes it fun right now.
How do you assess the catcher situation right now? And I say that because the report started fast and furious this morning that Raniel Rodriguez has been elevated to Double-A. He's only 19 years old. We know the catching lineup here with Rodriguez, Bernal, with Crooks, and of course, at this level, you have Pajes, Herrera, and Pozo. How do you sort that all out and resist the temptation to get Crooks up here?
And you know, that Double-A jump, that's the big jump, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point you made, Chris. You know, the thing is, if you're going to bring up Crooks, you have to play him. You know, you don't bring a guy up who's playing well to come up and watch. Now, I know people will say, well, Páez is not doing anything offensively well. Well, he is doing a few things defensively well. He's leading the league and throwing out runners, first of all. Secondly, the way he's handled his staff and how these guys are on the same page. Matthew Liberatore made a great point in a pregame segment the other day. He said, our brains are almost meshed as far as what we're thinking and how we want to go after people. And, you know, when these guys have that comfort level with catchers, it's kind of hard to push them to the side and bring up somebody who's swinging the bat well. You know, pitchers only care about whether a guy can catch or not. They don't really worry about offense. And, you know, I'm from the old school. If you have to worry about your catcher and your shortstop hitting, then you have bigger issues on your team to be concerned about. And right now, I like our catching setup. Ivan Herrera's catching 2 days a week, and he's having fun with that. So I'm not sure what you can do with regard to what you do at Crooks. Again, the offense is there. I don't know if I saw enough last year to let me know he can walk right in and start catching 3 days a week and having an impact because they pitch a little differently in the big leagues, as we're learning. So I would just let it sit for a bit. There's no urgency. These things have a tendency to work themselves out, whether it's a lack of production and, God forbid, an injury. So let's just sit tight and let Jimmy Crooks continue to get at bats and get the seasoning that he's going to need.
Last 2 weeks, the Cardinals have the second best starting pitching ERA of anybody else. Only Tampa Bay has been better. They're a first place team. The Braves are right behind them. They're a first place team. How is this starting pitching staff doing this? Is it sustainable? How do you look at it?
Yeah, you know, I think we have to figure out what their watermark is. You know, we're not going to strike out a lot of people. I think that's been indicated. I think we're last in strikeout percentage in baseball, but we get people out. And just when you say that, here's Michael McGreevy with a 9-strikeout night the other night. So I think what we have to do is set a parameter on what's acceptable on us being able to win, because I'm not sure if there's a Cy Young candidate on this roster as we speak. That doesn't mean you get 4 or 5 guys who are starting a deal and then get you to the 7th inning with a good bullpen and all of a sudden you have a pretty good ball club. So, yeah, I think we have to give it a little bit more time. Dustin May is probably your hard luck pitcher right now. He's not getting any run support, but he's given the Cardinals a chance to win the last 3 or 4 games he's been involved in. Mentioned McGreevy, and here's a guy with a sub-3 ERA, and he even fell lower. And he's not a guy that overwhelms you with velocity. Matthew Liberatore is starting to really find himself right now. And Andre Pallante, you know, who was a guy who we felt like, I don't know if he's going to make the rotation. Man, he's been dealing the last couple of games. But, again, they aren't eye-popping numbers. They just get you to the 6th inning, and that's all you hope for. You keep the runs down, and you got a chance, especially the way the offense is playing.
Claibs, my mom lives in San Diego and was at the game Saturday, and she had a few observations. One, she said, boy, the Cardinals team's really young, but they have a lot of energy, and they're a lot of fun to watch. Two, she said there were a lot of Cardinals fans there,
yeah,
which I she thought was great. But this was an interesting observation by her. She said, the place is packed. It's a big crowd and a very young crowd. She noticed a lot of young people. Yes. What are they doing in San Diego, Claibs, to get these people through there every day?
Well, that's a great question, Tom. And it's the most electric ballpark maybe in baseball right now. I mean, they do have a lot of young people that come out. They have a lot of young promotions for kids, a lot of families. And, you know, when you're winning and you're the only game in town, remember, they don't have any other pro teams in San Diego. What else are you going to do other than enjoy the weather? But I find that what they're doing here and what they did over the last 4 games was beyond noticeable. And you say to yourself, okay, we need to figure the magic potion on why. Now, here's the other thing. They have some recognizable names. You have Tatis Jr. You have Manny Ramirez. You know, you have some other guys who have been in the organization. So they have that working for them. We're developing that here in St. Louis with Wynn and Weatherholt and Walker and players of that ilk. So it takes a little time, but the entertainment between innings and, I mean, this place was just electric, man. I think the smallest crowd they had was 39,000. They had Mason Miller bobblehead night. and they had a line around the ballpark just to get into the pro shop, into the team store. Never seen anything like it. I mean, seriously, it was, and they would tell you it's going to be a 35 to 40 minute wait. They would tell people in the line, you think it fazed them at all? I mean, it was, I never seen that before. And you know, winning helps also, but they have something special going on here. I think the question now is, what are they going to look like with new ownership? Are they going to continue to invest in the players, or are they going to go in a different direction? And I think everybody's kind of holding their breath on that. But, you know, I guess when you spend almost $4 billion for a ball club, you probably don't want to mess with the product because it seems to be working with regard to fan interest.
That's right, man. I am sitting here and I'm thinking about the Cardinals and being in the division they're in right now and watching all of these teams have the success they have. And we've, you know, Tom and I just talked to Greg Amsinger about the Central Division, just how, you know, everybody's over 500. I keep looking at the standings and I can't believe it. You know, I can't believe.
Yeah.
And I know we're only in May and there's still a lot of time to go, but you have the last place team three games over 500. Are you surprised it looks like this right now?
No. And I'll tell you why. At the beginning of the year, I always pick teams that I think, you know, what the standings are going to look like. And we already knew the Cubs were going to be good because they have a good roster. We thought Cincinnati would compete because they have some young guys and they can swing the bat in their own ballpark. Milwaukee won the division last year. They won 97 games. So here comes Pittsburgh with some young arms, and they decide to reinvest in a couple of players, and you think they're going to be better. And then there are the Cardinals, who I think were the wild card, but I always remind people, yeah, we may be the wild card, but we still have the St. Louis Cardinals written on our shirts. And that means something with regard to commitment and making sure you compete. So that you have all those teams that are all balanced. And remember, they haven't really played each other within the division very much. I mean, we played Pittsburgh and we played Milwaukee. Haven't seen the Cubs yet. Haven't seen the Reds yet. You know, so when you have that situation unfolding, I'm sure somebody will come back to the pack and fall under 500. But I think the other thing that comes into play, when you look at this division and you take away Paul Skeens, you take away some of the players on the Cubs like Pete Crow Armstrong, it's not a division that has a lot of big name players that people are able to follow on a regular basis. You know, you look at the East and you have Soto and you have Schwarber, you have a few other guys on different teams. The West, you have the Dodgers, and you don't have to say anything more. So those divisions have a little bit more star power and name recognition, but the good baseball is being played in the National League Central Division right now.
Klabe's enjoyed the broadcast over the weekend. Have a great time in Sacramento as you take on the A's, and we'll catch up with you real soon. Thanks for being on with us.
Looking forward to it. We got to have Kansas City this weekend, and I know they have some great promotions. And next Friday night, Chaim Bloom is going to be part of our show from Cardinal Nation on Friday after the ball game, so everybody can come over and listen to the guy who's having a lot of fun watching this team grow.
That's Excellent. Awesome. That'll be on Friday the 15th. Mike Claiborne with us. Thank you, buddy.
All right. You guys take care.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Hey, just a quick thing before we go. There's no update that I can see on Ahmad Hardy's situation, what happened and where it happened. But we do still have the statement that Mizzou football saying that Ahmad Hardy was the victim of a shooting at a concert in Mississippi early Sunday morning, sustained a gunshot wound. We have that news this morning. Hardy underwent surgery. He's in stable condition. Pete Thamel of ESPN reported right after that, citing a source, that there was optimism that Hardy would play football again. How quickly he can return and the impact isn't known, said he's alert today and moving around. Other than that, and for whatever reason, but we just don't have any more information on the circumstance. That's very unclear at the moment, but I'm sure we'll get more info as the days move along or hours move along. But yeah, best to Ahmad Hardy.
It could have been a whole lot worse, but would love to get more details on what actually happened.
Thanks for joining us. It is the Gas House Gang. Ollie and Bernie are with us tomorrow. We'll have that for you.